let's say you purchased a short-term rental near the end of the year, you could do a cost segregation study of that short-term rental, depreciate that all that year and be able to use that cost segregation study to offset your W-2 income. And then next year you have a property manager run and oversee it as a short-term rental. Welcome to The Financial Commute, a weekly podcast that gives you the rundown on what's going on in the current market, how it affects you, and what you can do about it, all designed to fit into your commute. I'm your host, Chris Galeski, and each week I share the table with a knowledgeable guest, including Morton Wealth Advisors, fund managers, and investment analysts, to break down complex financial topics. Our goal is to provide you with the tools to help you navigate any market environment, leading to a path of more confident investing. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of The Financial Commute, your favorite place to find out what's going on in the world, how it affects you, and what you can do about it. I'm joined here by wealth advisor Patrice Benning. Patrice, thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Tax time. Let's talk about taxes.
The bane of our existence?
Tell me about it.
It doesn't have to be, though.
No, it doesn't. I know, look, we pay taxes just like our clients, and I know that I get a visceral reaction to the thought of paying taxes, very similarly to the conversations that we have extensively with clients around this time. And the majority of the conversations are like, hey, how can I pay less in taxes? And sometimes that is the right strategy, and sometimes it's not. Because one of the easiest ways to pay less in taxes is to make less money.
Right. Very true. But I think probably even when I think about the things, even when I talk to my friends, I feel that taxes sometimes favors a certain part of the demographic of the population. So if you're a business owner, you can write off more things. But if you're W-2, you kind of feel boxed in and not a lot of options. So maybe we can talk about some of the options W-2 high earners have?
We should talk more about W-2 high earners because you're right. I mean, the tax code favors business owners and real estate. And look, I didn't write the rules. I'm subject to both at times. It can be very frustrating when it comes to taxes. But yes, for today, let's talk about how high W-2 earners and or people that are retired could potentially save money on taxes. So what are some options for those W-2 salaried people to save money on taxes?
Let's start something easy, like a health savings account, HSA for short. So that is what we love this.
Look, it is my favorite account.
I know it is. Yeah. It's like the triple crown of all tax savings.
I get a tax credit going in. Mm-hmm. I get to take tax money out. I could take money out tax-free as long as I use it for medical expenses. Mm-hmm. And I get to grow it, so I can invest that money and grow it tax-free.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know.
Now, we can't really put that money, you know, infinitely amount of money in that account. So it's like, I think for this year, something around $8,300, $8,350 that a family can put in.
Yeah.
But
if you're over 55, you can add an extra $1,000.
Correct. Yeah.
By the way, this is not tax advice. We're just talking about strategy and ideas that can help potentially save you money on taxes. So health savings account, I love that as an option.
And the caveat is that you have to have a high deductible medical plan in conjunction with this initially if you work for an employer to be able to take advantage of it. So that's just a little nuance on that.
And one thing that people get confused about, because this is not a flexible spending account or an FSA that most are used to, a health savings account, if you have it or you choose to leverage it, the money that goes into the account, you don't have to use it at the end of the year. I remember a number of years ago, I had money left over in my FSA account, and I ran to my friend who's got a sunglass place, and it's like, I picked up some sunglasses so I can, not waste that money or let it go to zero. So a health savings account is a great option.
Yep. Retirement contributions, good old 401k, I think it's something that, people maybe they're a little ambivalent on that, but I would say be able to put away maximum amount of funds out of your paycheck and be able to figure out how to pay less, even though some folks, if you do pre-tax contributions, don't understand that you're going to have to pay taxes on that.
Later on.
And if you're banking on a lower tax bracket, that's also up for debate. But, you know, this year, the limit is 23,000. There's a catch up if you're over 50 of 7,500. So you can technically put in 30,500.
And you don't have to wait until you turn 50. It's the year in which you turn 50 that you can start making those catch up contributions. That often gets missed as well.
That's a great point there. And then if not, then good old IRIS, you know, putting $7,000 away this year and that, and adding a catch up of 1,000 on that. That's also.
So before we get into anything really creative, like some real estate things or those sort of tax codes, so far right now we've got maxing out health savings accounts. You actually don't have to do that in the calendar year. You have before you file your taxes, kind of like an IRA contribution, to be able to fund it. So if for some reason you put $2,000 in your health savings account and you can put an extra $6,000 in there, you have until April the following year to make that contribution. You just have to let your CPA, your accountant, know that you did it, so that way they can make the manual calculation. We talked a little bit about the maxing out your retirement contributions. You have to do that in a calendar year. What are some other ways, besides making less money, that you can save on taxes?
Well, I thought this was a little cheeky, but you could get married, Chris.
Yes, you can. And potentially save on taxes.
Not that we're encouraging folks to go out there, get married for the right reasons, but you're looking at a wider tax bracket. So almost double. Actually, most cases, it is double what you would pay, you would have as far as limits as a single person. So.
Should I go home and ask Brianna if she married me for tax reasons?
I wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you can get married. Got it.
Tax credits. Okay. I think there's this probably a lot more popular nowadays, and a lot of people are very savvy around this. But we're thinking about if you're looking to buy a new vehicle, electric vehicles have gained quite a bit of popularity.
If I qualify for, I think the highest one's what, a $7,500 tax credit?
Yeah.
So if I qualify for that $7,500 tax credit, that reduces my federal taxes by $7,500. So it's money right back in my pocket.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then solar is the other one that you can actually look to see to get credits back. So,
all right. So we've got HSA, retirement contributions, getting married, tax credits through solar or an electric vehicle. What about charitably inclined?
Well, we have lots of conversations around those particular items, but donor advised funds, also known as DAFs out there, probably one of our favorite ways when we talk to clients and that are charitably inclined. And I think if you were to take a step back, I think back in the day, if someone wanted to be to make significant contributions and be smart about it, they had to start a foundation and, you know, it was very expensive. There's cost involved with it. There's taxes to be paid. So now if you want to donate 10,000 versus 5 million, which maybe if you do 5 million right now, foundation would make sense. But a donor advised fund, think of it as a brokerage account that you can fund now, and then you get that deduction right now. The money goes in. You can then sell it in that particular account. There's no taxes paid because it's protected because of the purpose of the account. And then you can allocate from there to the organizations of your choice.
It's just a charitable account that's in your name. Mm-hmm. And let's say I bought XYZ stock at $10,000 and it's gone up to $100,000. If I had to sell that stock to then make a charitable donation, I have to pay capital gains. If instead I chose to take that position or a portion of it and move it into the donor advised fund, I get credit for the amount that I contributed into that donor advised fund in that year. So I can make that contribution during higher income years if I've got restricted stock units or stock options that are vesting. So I can make a larger contribution, and then that money sits in that account. And it's considered a donation for tax purposes, but I haven't given it to a charity yet. So I get one form saying I donated this money as far as the IRS is concerned, and then that money sits there. I can choose to invest it, or I can click a few buttons and donate money as I see fit in any increments, I think as low as $50.
That's right.
To any 501c3. That's a beautiful account. So we've talked about some really basic strategies. And again, this is not tax advice. These are ideas. If you have questions, please come talk to myself, Patrice, your wealth advisor here at More Than Wealth, or even potentially your CPA. So the basic ideas that we talked about today are health savings account, maxing out your retirement contributions, getting married, donor advised funds, tax credits, EV or solar. Now, there are some more nuanced strategies that people can deploy, but they should really seek a tax or potentially legal professional to deploy them. One of the ones I learned through a CPA friend of mine that talked about, if you own short-term rentals, mm-hmm. let's say you purchased a short-term rental near the end of the year. Again, this is not tax advice, and don't just go buy a short-term rental just to do this. But you could do a cost segregation study of that short-term rental, depreciate that all that year, and be able to use that cost segregation study to offset your W-2 income. And then next year, you have a property manager run and oversee it as a short-term rental. I think my CPA friend said that the IRS doesn't really like this, but it's technically legal and you should be very careful. But I thought that was fascinating, because normally you have to be a real estate professional. Correct. In order to qualify for real estate investments to offset your W-2 income. But short-term rentals have a different classification. So I thought that was interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the real estate professional designation.
So what's interesting about that, even if you think back to like, oh yeah, if you're married and you're able to now widen that tax bracket, but let's say that you have a spouse that maybe wasn't working at some point and now they're looking to go back to work. They can, if they materially participate in, let's say, property management, and that comes to about 12 hours a week, about 750 hours a year, then you're able to use that particular expense of like whatever it is that it takes for you to do that against the W-2 income that we have as being married in that context. So.
And so, look, I wouldn't make these last two decisions just to save money on taxes. You know, it's quite kind of funny, at least around here where we live. You tend to see a lot of very nice, fancy, brand new SUVs towards the start of a new year. And it's because people take advantage of some potential tax credits or deductions because the vehicle's over 6,000 pounds. I won't even go into that. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't just make some of these decisions just to save money on taxes. I think that you need to be able to have the liquidity and the ability to fund some of these things, the time, energy, and interest to invest in some of these other ways. But if you're curious about ways that you could potentially save more on taxes, please set up a time with us. We would love to run a financial plan, leverage our CPAs to help collaborate on your behalf, and have a further conversation. Patrice, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for joining us, and we hope this episode has provided you with a roadmap to feel more confident as an investor. To receive notifications about weekly episodes, email us at financialcommute@mornwealth.com.